We are going to energize the country.
We need to wake up and smell the coffee.
No more Mr. Nice Guy.
Another future's possible, but we've got to fight for it.
Order!
Hello and welcome to the Debated Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Will. And in this, which is the first episode of the new year, 2021, I'm delighted to be joined once again by William Kajani, the political bettings analyst for Star Sports Betting, to discuss the Georgia Senate runoff elections. Welcome back to the podcast, William.
Very pleased to be back. A happy new year to all of your listeners. May 2021 be better than the last year.
Indeed. And as we, when you were last on, we discussed at length the previous year and all of its foibles. So hopefully this year will be better. To begin with, for those listeners who aren't aware fully aware of US electoral law, or maybe confused, thinking, well, I thought the Senate elections were happening at the same time as the US presidential elections. Why are the Georgia Senate runoffs happening?
So they're happening because no candidates in the November elections, because basically when you vote for president, when you have a presidential election, it's not just for the president. There are hundreds of down ballot races for Congress and for the Senate, and no candidate got 50% in the November election. So as such, because no candidate won 50% of the vote, runoffs are necessary, and they have been triggered. Not the first time, I should add, in 2008, there was a runoff as well.
And this election is particularly interesting because we're seeing two Senate runoffs. We're seeing a race between David Perdue and John Ossoff, and Raphael Warnock and Kelly Loeffler. So what are the betting odds at the moment for either of those races? Are we seeing the people betting on it leaning more towards the Republicans or the Democrats? What are the betting markets suggesting?
The market is leaning Republican, which is understandable for reasons that we'll go into later. We started the Republicans as favourites. We still got them as favourites. Let me give you the prices for the special election first. Kelly Loeffler is 8-15. To win, and Raphael Warnock is 11-8. To put those into percentage terms, because sometimes people find that easier, Loeffler is a 65.3% chance and Warnock is a 42% chance. Of course, I should just say the caveat here is, of course, people have bet on these markets. They do move the odds. So liabilities, etc., have to be taken into account. But the market makes Loeffler the favourite. In the regular election, the Republican, David Perdue, is favourite once again. He is 1-2, that's 66.6%. And John Ossoff, the Democratic challenger, is 6-4, 40%. We also have prices for the overall control of the Senate after this. 5-2 on that the Republicans have majority control of the Senate. And for a split ticket, which basically I think would be Democrats winning both of these races, we are 19-10, 30, which is 34%. So long story short, Republicans are favoured, but Democrats are given a reasonable chance of pulling off two upsets as the market sees it.
Now let's just put these races into context. They will essentially decide, as you mentioned, who controls the majority in the Senate. Now, for listeners, could you explain why that is so important? Why control of the Senate, whether it be Republican or Democrat, will really decide the balance of how power goes for the next couple of years?
Absolutely. So there are, of course, as most people know, there are three branches, basically, of government. And the legislature is really, really important. Now, of course, you have the president and you have a Democratic president. The Democrats have a majority in the House of Congress. But these two results will decide control of the Senate. Why this is so important? Well, bills need to pass both the Senate and the House to become law. And of the many things on Joe Biden's plate, there are, let's be honest, very few where he won't need support from either Congress or the Senate. So it's looking uphill for the Democrats to win both in Georgia. We'll go on to that later. But let's imagine that they do. That's 50 senators. The Senate is basically tie-broken by the vice president. That's Kamala Harris. So if the Democrats could get 50 senators, they'd have effective control of the Senate. And that would give Biden a lot more power than he has now, where you're likely to have deadlock government. So this is really, really important because we're at a crucial era in the US's history, coming through the middle of a pandemic, of course, with substantial reforms, many would say needed in several areas of US public life, with also the climate change on the horizon, which is going to be very important, considering that Biden wants to get the US back to the Paris Agreement, and also lots of other issues that are being masked by COVID at the moment. I'm thinking especially of many foreign policy issues, an approach to the EU, approach to China, approach to Britain, etc. All of those things are far, far harder to do with a deadlock government.
Now, let's look at the races individually. First of all, I'd like to focus on the special election runoff between Raphael Warnock and Kelly Loeffler. And how important do you think the accusations of insider trading against the Republican candidate Kelly Loeffler will be to the race? Do you think that that's why on election night, though it, you know, obviously we didn't see a definitive result, Raphael Warnock seemed to be ahead of her? Do you think that that's going to be one of the central issues when people come to vote?
I do think it's important. I think it's important on a number of levels. Firstly, it's just motivating factors. Generally speaking, in local elections, big media stories can be a really useful way to energise people to turn out. I'm using a rather grim example here, but Roy Moore, do you remember Roy Moore?
Yeah, of course.
Back in the days when we were sort of in the thick of the Trump phenomenon of taking over the Republican Party, Roy Moore, of course, was accused of many historic abuses. Now, I know it's very grim, but it definitely did change the race. And there's no doubt, I don't think, that it was a powerful motivating factor for women to come out and vote against him. It's possible, I think, without that, that the race would have been definitely a lot closer and that he might also have possibly held on. Somebody like Roy Moore usually would have a better chance of winning in that state. I'm very, very scared now that I've gotten his state wrong. But moving back on to the Loeffler and Warnock story, I think it has had an effect, namely in the sense that it makes a good TV ad material. That sort of campaigning has a big effect, I think, in US politics in general, but also especially in an era where particularly Democrats aren't usually having these sort of big political gatherings for obvious reasons. So having a story that gives Warnock something to attack Loeffler with, but also that makes for good TV ad fodder, and also that can sometimes put Loeffler on the defensive, is useful. I should add, though, interestingly, I haven't heard all that much about the trading post-election. Mm. It feels like it was a bigger story in the lead-up to November the 3rd than the other way around.
Mm. Now, what do you think is going to be the role of religion in this race? Because, of course, Raphael Warnock has, for many years, for about 15 years now, I think, been a pastor at a Baptist church in Atlanta. Do you think that religion is going to be a strong element in this race and that it may influence the result at all?
Yeah, I absolutely do. I think, if anything, it already has. It's brought many racial issues to the surface. And there's also, I know that I said race rather than religion, but bear with me here because it's important in terms of understanding the background here. And there are differences between the white and black church in the South that are centuries old, which are really coming to the form. So Loeffler, and I think this is important to mention, she really, really does not like what Warnock has to preach. Warnock preaches from the Ebenezer Baptist Church in Atlanta. Leffler literally thinks it's a threat to capitalism, to the American way of life. And that is the sort of messaging, that sort of high stakes messaging that Republicans will be using to try and increase turnout. Because we've had an awful lot of early voting turnout again in Georgia. We're at 38.8%, which is a record for Senate runoff elections. We're in the end game now. These results, I think, will come on the... Well, the voting day is the 5th, the last day of voting. And we're in, I think, for another repeat of November in the sense that Republicans will vote more on the day. Democrats probably have voted more already. And issues such as religion are really, really important for that, because the Republicans' best line of attack in November, and this was everywhere down ballot, was to suggest that even if you didn't want to vote for Donald Trump, and many people didn't, you didn't want to vote for down ballot Democrats because they were radical liberals, they were radical leftists, they were wolves in sheep's clothing who would basically implement some form of communism if they got control of the branches in the White House. A very popular line of attack was that Biden was a basically puppet president in waiting to be sort of played with by the squad, you know, Alexandria, Ocasio-Cortez, etc. Now, I'm making a long point here, but it's important when you come back to Georgia, because Biden won nationally by about 4 or 5 points. Not a landslide, I don't think, but pretty comprehensive. He edged Georgia by less than 1%. That stuff matters. And the reason that religion matters here is basically because Warnock's beliefs have been targeted a lot by Loeffler. And you have a split basically between churchgoers who may be angry at America as a country, may feel that they've got less out of the American experience. And then you've got people like Loeffler who will basically want to present a vote for themselves as the essential defense of God and country. So religion plays a big part in American politics. You could argue it tipped the previous election before November 2020, and I think it already has again. But just how, we don't quite know. There seems to be reasonably good voting numbers for the Democrats based on what we've seen. But just quickly to end this point, Loeffler's route to victory and the Republicans' route to victory will probably be by scaring enough people, I'd have thought, to turn out in numbers on the day, even if they believed the election was stolen from them, which is another point to make.
Now, you talk about scaring voters there. What sort of scare tactics do you think that they are going to use? Do you think this is going to link at all to the conspiracy theories that Donald Trump has still been propagating, that the election was stolen by Democrats? Are those the sort of like scare tactics you're thinking of?
Yes. Well, not necessarily those as scare tactics, because those tactics don't help Republicans. If anything, actually, there's been a sort of worry in the GOP that Trump's repeated assertions that the election was unfair have really spread out to voters nationwide, Republican voters. This is a problem when it comes to the Senate elections, because why would you vote if you believe that your vote doesn't count or the election will just be stolen? And when you see the amounts of Republicans that do believe the election wasn't free or fair, you've got a problem. In terms of scare tactics, I think the line of attack that was used in November will be the one that's used this time around, which is namely that you can't trust the Democrats as a whole with control of the Senate and the House. You don't want them setting your laws. You don't want them in charge of the federal government, in charge of spending, etc. And you really also don't want radical leftists to be essentially puppeteering Joe Biden. So I think we know the line of attack. It's simple. It proved effective in November. Whether it will prove as effective this time around remains to be seen, but it's certainly, I think, a big problem for the Democrats to overcome, especially Warnock. Although that said, in the polling, They're holding up just fine in the polling.
Now, I'd like to turn to the regular election runoff between David Perdue and John Ossoff. Now, one of the things that has been very much part of this campaign, unfortunately, has been anti-Semitism against John Ossoff, quite often propagated by Republican opponents. How much do you think that that is going to impact the result of the race? And also, what similarities or differences do you see between the way that anti-Semitism has invaded American politics and the way that, as we talked about last time we spoke, the way it has impacted on UK politics?
Those are really good questions. I think anti-Semitism has always been a scourge, and I think it's something we've seen a resurgence of recently. When I say resurgence, I mean increasing, to be very clear, in public life on both sides of the Atlantic. It seems to me that it wasn't as prevalent in the US in terms of being a political issue. I think probably because, even though there have been plenty of anti-Semitic comments made by members of both parties, no leader has been explicitly called out as anti-Semitic or having anti-Semitic connections. I also don't know if that's even a charge that you'd get to stick, really, against anybody in the upper echelons of the Democratic Party. You know, I think plenty of people tell you Trump is anti-Semitic. I haven't heard anything in that vein about Loeffler or Perdue. So whilst I think it's an issue, and support for Israel has always been an issue when it comes to election and foreign policy, my feeling is that other religious concerns like Christianity, namely, would be ahead of it. And I think whilst it's something to watch out for, always, I imagine it won't be the first line of debate for either side.
Now, we've talked quite a bit about some of the shifts in terms of people voting and the political makeup of Georgia, not just on this podcast, but on previous episodes of the podcast. And of course, Joe Biden winning Georgia was very much seen as a major upset and the first Democrat to win Georgia for quite a while. How much do you think that this election will be seen in the future as the moment when the political battlegrounds of the US changed and shifted and the political certainties diverged from what they had been previously?
That's a really good question. And I think the answer is that it will be seen as, I think in the next 5-10 years or so, it will be seen as pivotal. But if you go a bit further than that, it will probably be seen as nothing more than a sort of steady change. We've had moments of steady change in terms of the racial makeup of the US as a whole, but we're already seeing it, or we're already seeing, I think, really ramp up in this particular part of the country, and certainly actually in states that have been always traditionally Republican. You know, the reason I think that we're going to get some state-by-state results that aren't seen as huge surprises is because we're seeing these states evolve in terms of their racial background. And when I say evolve, I mean just change, basically. Texas, for instance, is not as white a state as many people would presume. It's changed quite a lot since 2000 and since the 80s before that. In Georgia, black eligible voters have accounted for nearly half the electorate's growth since 2000. And you know, that's an increase of 1.9 million voters. Nearly half of that has been attributed to black eligible voters. So the demographics are changing. And in theory, and I think we have seen this borne out a little bit, that changes the stakes for both the Democrats and the Republicans. And I think it definitely gives Democrats a slight advantage here, in the sense that this is just more favourable turf than it was in 2008 and 2000 before that, and in the year before that, and the year before that, etc.
Now, we're coming to the end of the podcast, and obviously we've been discussing Georgia, but also, you know, in a few days we're going to be seeing Joe Biden inaugurated as president. So just turning to him for a moment as my final question to you, what do you think when Joe Biden assumes the presidency will be the top three things on his list to do?
Number one, coronavirus vaccination program. He needs to get it out fast. He needs to get it out as fast as possible. We have really bad numbers here. In America, I think they're matching us in terms of per 100,000 population. And I think a lot of people are dying over there, unfortunately. So number one priority, roll out the vaccine. Do it as fast as physically possible. I've already heard talk about Biden utilising the Defence Production Act to create vaccines and deliver them to the states. The US, by the way, has a lot of vaccines on order. It's bought heavily, obviously, through Operation Warp Speed. That would be number one. Number two will be getting some sort of uniform national consensus on restrictions and what to do, because it's out of control there. And it's going to be worse by the time Biden gets in before it gets better. I think one of Biden's big challenges will be to utilise the power of the American state. And it's a mighty, mighty power. As efficiently and as quickly as possible, basically in the way that other nations have been able to do. Even the UK government has done a better job in terms of utilising state power to combat coronavirus. That'll be Biden's number two prerogative. Number three is a tricky one. I know I can only have three. I think it's going to be reconnecting on the international stage. I think Biden is going to spend a lot of time just reversing things Trump did. So re-entering the Paris Climate Accords, renegotiating or re-entering into the Iran deal, I think is close to the top of his list. How viable that might be, I don't know. Getting a China strategy is going to be really important. There is not a huge amount of discussion about this in terms of, like, you know, normie political circles, but if you're an even middling to large nation, you need a China strategy yesterday. One that accepts, not morally, but one that accepts that the Chinese state will act with impunity in some areas because of their size and their scope, but one also that looks at options for divergence from China in certain areas like manufacturing, whatever, and one also that basically makes decisions about your strategy for the next few years. That's going to be, I think, one of the big foreign policy stories of the next decade. I'd be very surprised if Biden and his team haven't done a lot of thinking about it, but that would be my third thing.
Well, I think that that's certainly a list that I would have picked. And obviously, we will have to just wait and see what happens. Thank you once again for coming on the podcast, William. If anybody isn't following you, I mean, they should already be, but just in case they aren't, how can they follow you and how can they find out more about you?
I'm on Twitter at capital KEEJAYOV. Two. So KEEJAYOV2. I'm sure you'll see it in the tag for this podcast, but that's where I am on Twitter. My work can be found by going to www.starsportsbet.co.uk. Hopefully we'll have a couple of political things up there as well. And last but never least, starsports.bet/politics is where you'll find the odds for the Georgia Senate races and many more. We hope to have lots of political markets for the year. If you have any suggestions, please do let me know. We're always open to new ideas.
Excellent. Thank you once again for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the podcast. If you've enjoyed it, you can subscribe to us on iTunes, Spotify, Podbeam, and Amazon Music. You can also follow us on Twitter at Debated Podcast, like us on Facebook, Debated Podcast. And if you'd like to get in touch with us, whether about appearing on an episode of the podcast or commenting on an episode that you've listened to, you can do so at thedebatedpodcast@gmail.com. Thank you for listening. I hope you listen to the next one.